Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. Today, we have AJ Thomas, the CEO of Troublemaker Lab, founder and general partner of Good Trouble Ventures, where she helps extraordinary founders build enduring companies through coaching, strategy, and mindful innovation. She ran global talent and human experience design groups at X, the Moonshine Factory, known as Google X, and as CXO in residence at A-Team. AJ, welcome to the pod.
Bonjour, bonjour, comment allez-vous? Je m'appelle Angé.
I love it. Incroyable. Welcome. You have the sophistication of a real guest of Experience Focus Leaders.
Oh, no.
I was looking for somebody who could do as many accents as me, and I found somebody who could exceed me by 10x, like Google Moonshot level.
You know, this is just an AI plugin. So, like, I clicked. Yeah.
I
plugged in and it allowed for me to do a different accent.
Hey, bene, welcome to our Italian thing. I hope you had a cappuccino that will melt
cannoli,
you.
Cannoli.
Yes, excellent. All right. Well, this is not going to be your traditional B2B oriented podcast. We're going to talk about creativity.
Right.
And I think was, you know, my sloppy introduction was not doing it the service. Let's talk about kind of what you're at the intersection of both with Troublemaker Lab and the Venture Fund.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm, you know, super excited to be making trouble at this point in my life. I think I look at the work that I do as a portfolio of impact that I'm trying to create. Mm-hmm. And have the privilege of doing that every single day. But at the lab, really, we accelerate, you know, founders, teams, and their mission. So where you typically would think of a startup accelerator or a business accelerator, we focus really on the human in the middle of that entire ecosystem they're trying to create. And our principle is really around looking at this triangle of a founder, executive, or leader at the center of their self, health, and wealth. And so we can talk a little bit more about that. And then the fund, really that intersection is again another triad that kind of completes it, which is really around the passion of funding and finding companies and investing in the companies that are at the intersection of technology, creativity, and culture. And so that's Good Trouble Ventures. So excited to work on that with a couple of my co-founders. We are an all-female fund, which is amazing. And we're really excited to invest in that space and then really hook in the troublemakers within the lab around the principles of how we accelerate founders, teams, and their missions.
Beautiful. Well, look, so it sounds like we have the two anchors of the conversation. Let's start with something profoundly human that's relevant to everybody. You know, we all have a self, we all have some health, and we all have some wealth that we want to create for ourselves or for our customers. Mm-hmm. I feel that in the venture community, the focus on compounding and scaling and hyper and reactive takes a bit away from the health dimension and maybe self-awareness dimension. Or if it does it's sort of a means to an end. It's like, yeah, I'm going to measure myself up to wazoo to live longer, but I'm still going to be a shitty human being that I have been, you know, type of thing, like as a negative thing, or, you know, self-awareness is
probably a time is applied to, for example, manipulate people into getting you to do something, right? Creating a FOMO is a classical thing that you encounter as an investor, probably, which is a form of manipulation to some degree. But like, what is your take on, wealth is created, so we can talk more about that. But what is your take on how do we do this more holistically?
Yeah, I mean, I think if people have the courage to be curious, not only externally, but internally on why they're leaning into something. I mean, I talk about this a lot, this golden circle that we've all been accustomed to by our amazing friend, Mr. Simon Sinek, who talks about the why and the how and the what. And I think I would endeavor to also take a look at not only those dimensions, but looking at the who. Who is the foundation of how you can get to a clearer why, a better how, and a more precise what in what you deliver, right? And so I think the conversations that I tend to have is really also getting curious with myself around what is the question, the activating question that you want to ask people so that they can be present. Right. And I don't know if you know about this. We talk a lot about this in our coaching work. I do a lot of work with the UC Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute, part of their faculty. We talk a lot about what's called the fourfold way, which was coined by Dr. Angelus Arie. And I'm going to introduce that early here. It's a great hanging point. And the fourfold way is so interesting because it just grabs you back to who you are. Without forcing you to say emotional intelligence is great, right? It's very simple statements. Number one, show up and choose to be present. How are you showing up and choosing that and not just being there because you're present? Like, what does present actually look like? Be intentional around why you're there.
So the intention that
It's
you
huge.
bring into to being, like, what is the intention for us to be here? Is to have a wonderful,
Conversation.
rich conversation, right? It's not, and we kind of, it was great that we discussed it as like, let's have some fun. Let's
Exactly.
enjoy these 45 minutes of the workday. And maybe if we enjoy it, other people will
Other folks.
experience the joy of it. But that's not even the main goal, right? Like, I think it's sort of the goal is like two people connecting.
That's right. That's right. So we're showing up and choosing to be present, right, Alex? And then the next level of that is then being able to listen to what has heart and meaning for somebody, right? Sometimes when you're in a conversation, particularly if I'm in a coaching conversation with somebody in the lab, they will say a word three or four times. And if you're not really present, you're not able to hear that's leaking out of them. And so from a way of saying, hey, you've said that word present now four times. What does that mean to you? Brings them back to that human factor instead of like, oh, I've got a goal to get this thing done. And it may shift the way that you have that conversation. And then after the fact of really being able to listen to what has heart and meaning, I think the most important piece, which I love in these four principles, is being able to tell the truth without blame or judgment. I think you earn the price of admission to do that, specifically in high stakes conversations with clients or partners, et cetera. If they feel like you've shown up and you've chosen to be present there with them, that you've listened to what has heart and meaning for them, you have the opportunity to tell the truth without blame or judgment. Hey, I'm hearing that this is really hard for you right now, or that this deal, we can't actually move forward unless this thing is done, or this communication is actually not what you want to send, right? So how do we think about that and give ourselves the permission to lean into something different versus just thinking we have to land this thing? And then finally, that last principle is being open to outcome and not attached. If you think about an innovative mindset, being open to outcome allows for you to see like Doctor Strange level possibilities, right? Ways in which you can see what other things are possible if you're not attached to an outcome and you're really open and you're present and you're seeing that it's something that you can get curious around to lean into. So back to what I was saying earlier, I think the courage to be curious is how we really help folks make the kind of trouble that they eventually want to make anyway.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think on that last piece that really resonates with me. It's almost a sense of exploring because it's a better use of the, that's better than like, so there's sort of American, and as somebody who came to the US, as a kind of quintessential embracer of the culture. There's this sort of ethos of like pursuit of happiness, pursuit of big dreams. But I find that the feeling of exploring is a more fun one, right? Which is why, you know, we have planets here, both of us, you know.
Your planets are moving, so they're exploring. Yeah. My planets are like, we have explored. We are here.
Yeah. Well, hey, if this is my contribution to your learning, that I'll take it. I don't know if I could add much more, but moving. But exploring versus the sort of the, because the by pursuing happiness, mm-hmm. you're by definition already needy. You're not, you know, it's not a little sense of desperation is emerging for that. Whereas like, hey, I'm curious where this journey could take us. Exactly. It's a very different mindset. It sounds small, and we kind of believe in the sort of, you know, pursuit of happiness, and, you know, as a big word, but I think there's that's the one thing the founders didn't quite get right. It's like pursuit of the journey, or what ultimately is probably what makes us happier in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think a lot of the founders and the leaders that I've had the opportunity to work with over the years, I think one commonality that I see for those that are fulfilled leaders that embody that fulfillment is the exploration they go into is not external. When we think about exploration, it kind of gives us this feeling of like, I have to go out.
Yes.
And I think the fulfillment is actually when you explore in. Who was it? Walt Whitman, who said, I contain multitudes.
Yes.
Right? The last frontier is not space. It is not the ocean. It is ourselves, right? Mm. We use there's 75% of the brain at capacity that we're not using. And what does that look like? What does that look like when it's tied to you somatically, your heart, your feelings, your physical embodiment of how you're present?
Yeah.
I think what I've seen in leaders that have been super fulfilled, you know, ones that are doing the beat and raise on their, you know, quarterlies, that are acing kind of, you know, their vision for their product or nailing that roadmap with their engineering or technical teams, they are doing a lot of inward introspection that allows for them to have the clarity to have the communication of what their vision and their mission is. It's super embodied. You can see it when a leader has it, and you can feel it when a leader doesn't.
Yeah. I'm gonna quote, I don't know exactly who to attribute it to, but it resonated with me. And you, what you said just triggered this thinking. The journey of true discovery lies not in finding new lands, but in looking through new eyes.
Ooh. Oh, I love that. You just gave me
strength. Yeah. Nice. There's something about that, right? Because that's effectively what I heard you say here. And it's this internal journey. I would say, particularly in this sort of difficult conversation piece,
mm-hmm.
I almost find that sometimes the more difficult conversations are not even at work; they're in your personal relationships with family, typically, or family surrogates, whether it's your, you know, parents, or, you know, I'm a father of three, and so I'm kind of. Starting to figure out, hey, the same things that I do that are not as impactful as I wish at work could be not as impactful as I wish in my, you know, a relationship with kids or my partner. And that was sort of a big learning. And there's nothing, you know, no amount of pitching could help solve that, right? Like this is very interesting way to go in and say, hey, this is a pattern of behavior that I've adapted, have served its purpose at its time, and without any judging, blaming others, saying, hey, maybe this is my own, this is a gift that I have now that this thing is coming up, and it's sort of unlocking learning areas and taking yourself on an adventure, right?
Absolutely.
Of exploring, hey, what if I try new behaviors? Like, what if I try experiment new ways of adopting it? So I don't know what your thoughts is on this and kind of linking using the work as a spiritual transformation in personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that journey you just described as you were walking through it, I see the through line between how you're thinking about the awareness of yourself in service to your health. And that could be mental health. That could be the mental health that feeds into your physical and emotional health and well-being.
Yeah.
which then turns into how you think about longevity for yourself and your community and your family and your kids and all the things that make, this wonderful life that you have. And then in turn, if you can unlock some of those curiosities in that self, in your health, how you reframe it, you also begin to reframe what wealth looks like. Right? We're not here like recommending financial planners, by the way, with the lab. We really look at what is wealth to you? It could be time, it could be money, it could be relationships, it could be the work you're doing. All of those things are in the bucket of what wealth looks like, but it is really about how you define that. And there are some times where I work with founders who, for example, have just crossed their Series B funding or are in IPO prep, for example. And a dear friend and mentor of mine actually likes to say, you want to know the true character of a person, you give them all kinds of money and you see kind of what happens, right? You give them money, you give them
Because you
power, you
remove
give
the
them leverage.
constraints, you get
You
you
remove
or the
the constraint.
power, or power is like probably
Well, you
money
remove
is a type of
the constraint.
power, right?
That's right, because it layers in what kind of power comes in. And what's really interesting there is if you've not done that internal work before getting there, we tend to kind of find there's a conflict between how somebody wants to show up externally, but how they actually think about what it means for them personally. And so a lot of the work we like to do with the lab or with founders and leaders, and especially with their teams, is really taking a look at you have a decision. There's a chasm you're going to cross. You're either going to be this or that, right? And I think what the culture tends to optimize for is you're either this or you're either that. But the key to it, and again, the most fulfilled leaders that I see are the ones that go back to grounding and say, even if it's this or that, I
I'm
am
gonna be okay.
still this person. This is still me. I'm still going to be curious. I'm still going to be a learner. I understand it's going to change me, but I understand what it changes in me because I'm grounded in who I am and I'm constantly learning. And I think that's the stuff you don't really learn in business school. That's the stuff that you figure out when you're in dire straits and maybe you only have 2 months left of runway in your startup because your burn was so high. Right? So anyway, I think like when you're talking about that, it all does encompass, but how conscious are we to those conversations when they're happening?
I think so business school can start some of the lessons. I have to give a shout out to Stanford. The most popular class there is the touchy-feely, also known as interpersonal dynamics, right? And so it sounds like you're familiar with that. But the premise there is to start giving some language around, at least awareness around your external perception. And then you start just connect, well, that's not what I meant. And then, like, when you start thinking about how you show up externally, typically starts unlocking all these narratives that we
That
have. But I don't think it finishes the job. I think then it's up to you to start going deeper into this personal journey, because ultimately the business schools are still a little bit of like, how do I influence others mindset, and like, how do I show up?
external, right? It's very external.
It's a little external. It's like, and it will say like, okay, you need to be vulnerable to influence others. Okay, and I'm sorry, but like, aren't you freaking missing the point? The point of being vulnerable is not to influence, not do a fake vulnerability to influence somebody. And yeah, you need to think maybe like, oh, I don't want to just throw up with all my problems, and like
Yeah, and
drop
that's
them
not
on people that are not
vulnerability
ready.
either. I know, and that's I think is the interesting part that I'm curious about is that vulnerability is binary. Like you're either telling all of your secrets and your feeling, or you're not. And it's really not that it the vulnerability actually, I think for me, what I've observed specifically is, I had the opportunity with the lab to work with a few leaders within the astronaut selection group at NASA. And what's been fantastic about that is, vulnerability, as we think about it, is actually within the present moment. How open are you in that present moment? You don't have to give me the history of your entire trauma and your childhood to show me you're vulnerable. The pure act of being able to be open to listening to somebody and holding space is vulnerability, and then being able to share and say, you know what, I see that, and here's kind of what I've also gone through, and if it's helpful, let's have the conversation around that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's in the vulnerabilities within the moment, and not kind of like, let me give you a history of like all of my trauma and what I've been
Yeah.
through and all of these things. There's a time and a place for that. But also I think what I've seen when it's done at that level of true authentic vulnerability is you don't have to explain your credentials or your trauma credentials or all the things you've been through.
Yeah.
Show up in a way that all of that is evident when you're having the
In your,
conversation.
yeah.
You have the courage to be curious.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm almost thinking sometimes the hardest thing is just to, when you're being like, for example, seeing a behavior of your child that triggers you, is to not to react. It's sort of like, and that is actually, that means that you need to, part of it is whole, like being there, but part of it is like basically, maybe it's a different term of type of vulnerability, but part of it is basically because it's saying I can live with this, I can
That's right.
accept things that are not perfect, and not try to control the situation
Yeah,
right
not
away,
trying to
right?
fix
And
it. Sometimes people just want you to not only hear them, but to see them for who they are. And a lot of that is just presence and not having to be like, oh, okay, great. Well, here's a solution and here's how we fix it. In the business world, we've kind of been given that Pavlov's dog exercise, right? It's like, okay, if I do this, I get this. If I do this, I get this. Oh, the moment I don't get it, oh, my whole world has kind of been turned upside down. Whereas I think the more embodied and present leaders allow and say, interesting. I'm curious, what does that bring up for me now that it's not there? Right? It's kind of like
Exactly.
layering it into like, oh, we've had 9 straight quarters of, year over year, month over month, quarter over quarter growth. Now it's not there. Instead of going, oh, let's do more of the same, we get curious. We have the courage to get curious and go, huh, I wonder what that looks like. Let's go back to having that conversation. So.
So let's use the model that you laid out. Let me ask you a question. What is most meaningful and impactful for you right now? Like, as we're having this conversation, or maybe today as a kind of day, like what comes up for you?
I think what comes up for me is I always think about the word access, right? Growing up as somebody who wanted to be a musical artist, I want to be a musician. It was like hit me in the
Well,
head
look,
going,
what, show us your mic. Show us your mic. You have a mic here somewhere?
oh,
No.
here we go. Here, let me see if I can bring this forward.
Yeah, there you go.
We've
There you
got a
go.
nice
There you
little.
go. I love this. So this feels like 50s are back. I love that. I have one of those.
The 50s are back. Yeah, I've got a few more here in the studio. But I think for me, what is coming up is again access. There is probably somebody out there that is, I always think about these kinds of conversations where, somebody is out there looking for an insight or an inspiration or something to get them started. And I think this whole piece of access, like the fact that you have this podcast where you're having conversations with folks that have very different, vast perspectives, is a way of access, is a way of opening doors, right? And so I think about that in this present moment and having this conversation with you and layering this out. I mean, if you think about, just a little bit about me as I'm, landing into the space. Yeah, I went to some amazing schools. I've done some really great things. I've started a company, all of that. But you probably wouldn't know that there's a story behind all of that, right? I came to America and found out I was an undocumented immigrant. I have lived in my car in the Bay Area while I was going to grad school. I have had the opportunity to, be faced with a name like AJ Thomas, walk into a room, people thinking I'm a man. And then being delightfully surprised, going, wow, you're not, you, what? And so I've had kind of all of these biases and things where I've had the opportunity to kind of like buck the trend a little bit. It all comes from an informed path of knowing what it was like to not have. And what's interesting there is that has actually helped me think about, wow, I can't be the only person that doesn't have the access to certain things. And so I've made it really a conscious effort, and I work on it every day to think about what kind of access, what kind of other doors can we create, not just open, right? Because it's easy to open doors when they're already there. But are
Yeah.
there doors we can create where there never was a portal to a thing? As a Filipino first generation immigrant woman, like I never thought I would be in the rooms that I'm in now, and I'm so thankful for it. And I feel the opportunity to be able to, relay that to the next generation and connect that and be that for, even if it's just one person, it makes a difference. So that's what's coming
So
up for me.
you are your personalized Doctor Strange in the
Yeah,
business of portal creations. I love it. Well, that's a beautiful story, and I think I wonder how important it is in that to have started from a place of lack, which maybe you felt it or not, but like I don't know how you interpreted it, but it's like in an objective world, it wasn't like
I actually didn't even know I didn't have it
You did,
until
didn't
I
have
had
it,
it.
and now, but you're now in thinking about how do we create the sort of abundance mindset, and I think
Yeah.
that's really beautiful because a lot of people that come to America with lack or something to prove,
Chip on the shoulder.
they have a chip on their shoulder. And by the way, here's mine, right? Like
Me too.
I'm not saying this. Hello, buddy, right? Like. And I think getting to, and it gives us this drive, this intensity, this need to perform that gets us into the schools, right? That gets you into the your students at Berkeley or other folks. And then we kind of achieve that worldly success in one shape or form, and then find that it's meaningless,
Yeah.
or we're still not happy and we still are not done because that voice is inside. And I'm curious as to kind of what led you to that discovery, because this is a very deep conversation that I would expect to have with somebody in their 60s, 70s, and those are watching this, not to bracket you, but you have genuinely youthful energy, right? So I like a lot of this learning for me has there are inklings, but it's coming a bit later. And
Yeah.
I think if I had a wish is like to everybody obviously comes to their conclusions at their own time, but like my personal goal is to help people that I work with to come to make their mistakes, but make them more efficiently on this journey to being better selves, right? And I'm curious, what led you on that journey?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this because, we it sounds so trite right now, like hindsight is 2020, right? You don't really like I said earlier, I didn't actually realize that I didn't have much until I had more. If that makes sense, right? And so that was like a certain insight for me in my 20s when I started seeing, oh wow, like this is available. And it became such a surprise because I had no expectation that I was ever going to
Sure.
be this thing. I just kind of said, oh, okay, let me lean into that. And to this day, I get people asking me, how do you do everything you're doing? Like, how do you do it all? And it's such a funny question to me. It's endearing in a way, but it's funny because my answer is simple, two words. I don't, right? I have a really fantastic family at home that, keeps me whole, keeps me grounded. I, by the way, Alex, have three kids myself. And they
Okay.
are my biggest teachers in all the things,
Yes.
right? At this current moment in
Amen.
time, I have a high schooler who's 14. I have somebody who is in elementary school, my son who's 9. And then I have a little one that is in transitional kindergarten who just turned 4. They're all in very different stages in their life.
Yeah.
And it does sometimes feel like, everything everywhere all at once. But then there is this for me, grounding. Like, how do
Sure.
I ground myself so that, again, I'm going to say this, I have the courage to be curious every day.
Yeah.
And that's in big moments where it's a strategic plan we have to look at long term for an organizational intelligence strategy,
Yeah.
in the micro moments of, wow, my little guy is crying in the corner. I wonder why, instead of saying,
Yeah.
don't cry, you're going to be fine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're
So it's sort of
fine, you're
interesting.
fine.
So the to connect the dots to the kids, sort of this phrase really resonated with me, is that it's not that we parents help our kids grow up, it's that they help us grow up.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And it sounds like, I'm curious, did you start, but you said it's connected with you in the 20s. So,
yeah. Well, so I had my 14-year-old very early on. I was 26 years old when I had my firstborn, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. By the way, I still don't know. No secrets here. Like, still don't know. And I think that is why I think this battle cry of the courage to be curious is so important. Mm. Because it challenges you to ask a question out of curiosity, not certainty, right? Yeah. It challenges you to go from internal to external versus external to internal. I kind of think about this as, are you driving for yourself or are you driving through being stimulated by something externally? And so I think for me, and it's funny because I do get folks that are like, oh, you have so much wisdom for somebody who's just like started this thing. And I think wisdom is relative. There is also a lot of wisdom in a 4-year-old. Right. And it's
you want to have heart of a 4-year-old is the most beautiful thing, because there's no blocks, right? Like, it's just, there's just pure, unbridled human kindness and authenticity there. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
So I think that's the thing, is I think as humans and as leaders, like, how do we reframe ourselves to go back to that child that we once were, that was curious, that had the courage to go, oh, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to jump from one monkey bar to another. How does that relate to, I'm going to go jump from one market to another industry to expand my enterprise or whatever it may be. But I think about it as in, you know, here's the thing, asking me, I've written 2 children's books, and people are like, why do you write children's books? I was like, do you understand the market for children's books? Here's how I thought about it. Not even parents, because guess what? You're touching the user. Sorry, I'm going to speak like a product person now. It's hilarious.
Okay.
You're touching the user with that product, because guess what? Everyone was once a kid.
Yeah.
Nobody was born a grown up, right? Like, everyone.
We still are kids. They're like, the secret to life is understanding that you're looking at a 12-year-old, you know?
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah.
Prepubescent middle schooler in those Zoom calls, in the boardroom, you know, like, there is this opportunity for us to really, you know, I love this, like, there's 2 rules in life. Rule number 1, don't take yourself so seriously. And rule number 2, see rule number 1.
Number 1,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't, you know, there is a place for, like, the suited.
This is
and the
so
food.
True. This is the reason we, in France, there's a joie de vivre. This is, we do not take, we take our food seriously. We take our food seriously. We take our wine seriously. But not our.
The croissant must be serious, but we are not. Wait, I went into a totally completely different accent there. But yeah, I mean, I think as we think about how we might look at the world in a different lens, how we might look at innovation as not a framework, how we might look at it as a, you know, I love this acronym. My daughter, when she was 10, shared this with me, which I thought was so brilliant. I didn't realize what it was, but you know what the acronym is for FAIL? I'm a huge thing on acronyms. FAIL, first attempt in learning.
Oh, lovely. Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so looking forward to all of my fails. I want to keep failing so that I can have a first attempt in learning. Because the second attempt, and you do it the same thing, it's a mistake. Now that's like a root cause corrective action. And then my 8-year-old, or 9-year-old now, but 8-year-old at the time, recently clued me into this from this show. But UGLY, you know what UGLY stands for? You gotta love yourself.
Ooh.
It's so good. It was like, oh my gosh, I have to get ugly so that I can fail. I gotta love myself.
Fail more. Get ugly.
Get ugly. Man, we gotta get that ugly campaign.
That's beautiful. Well, so for a lot of our audience, they're listening to this. This sounds great. And yet there is this
reality
thing, and especially you have this other head as a venture investor, where there's a lot of other things going on. There's kind of a chance there's luck, there's pattern matching, you know, maybe there's like assessing the character of the individuals that you're investing and kind of where they are in the journey. But it is, there's a little bit more brutish as a world, you know, like out there. And, you know, you have to say no to, you know, what, hundreds of people,
so many,
you know, to pick one. And that must be also its own challenge. So you kind of, by definition, almost have to be judgy. And I noticed a lot of investors after some time, they just, they have a challenge of, I think they start sizing up people and then they bring that into their human relationships. And it's sort of, they need to, the venture mind doesn't work and the family mind is my sense, right? Like, there needs to be very clear separation. So tell us a little bit about kind of, how do you think about, how do you think about balancing, you know, bringing these two worlds together holistically?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the reasons why I think I felt called to, you know, found Good Trouble and really look at this fund is, number one, I was already doing a lot of angel investing in the future of workspace. It was a space where I, you know, future wise, you know, my kids will eventually be in this work environment in place. And like, what kind of amazing opportunity do I have to now like shape what that looks like? And then I started really doing a lot of inner work around what was really passion, you know, a passion for me, and where I felt most purposeful was really in the creative arts. And I saw there was a lot of what I would say marginalized communities in that space, not in a sense of, you know, oh, poor creatives and artists, but, you know, 98% of the artists that are out there, you know, do not have a full-time job making a living. They're trying to figure out the system by which they can continue to create and inspire this world. And so I said, well, how does that, like, who invests in creatives? And so a lot of the thesis of our fund has really been about, you know, keeping the creator, the creative, the athlete, and the artist at the center of the technology that's emerging right now. And that is our thesis of what we invest in, whether it's IP content and media, and how we look at music, TV, and film, whether it's, you know, AI infrastructure picks and shovels in a you know, SaaS tech stack or a consumer stack for the creator economy, whether it's data insights platforms that inform what's going on in sports and gaming. I mean, if you think about it, IP content media, AI infrastructure picks and shovels, data and insights, investors are already investing in that. They are already doing it in their verticals. Yeah. There has not really been a place where you've consolidated a lot of that in the creative arts that keeps the creative, the creator, the artist, and the athlete at the center of it. And so I think that's what's important to us and how I balance it. Even when we look at deals, even when we look at founders, there's four things we look at: the humans, the opportunity, the product, and the deal. The humans are, you know, are you the right person right now in your experience and what your conviction is around solving this problem that you will create the impact you are hoping for, right? What does that look like? Character-wise, I can't actually assess somebody's character. I can see what it is in the present moment and also a little bit indicative of what the past looks like. But what we look for there is, do they have the willingness to change and pivot, or are they set in their ways? That actually is really great when you think about personal relationships as well. Are they primed for growth, right?
Yeah.
That's number one, because that is everything. If you take a look at negotiating a term sheet, if you take a look at the long-term relationship you're going to have in investing, oh my word, that is so important to be able to have a partner in somebody or a founder that is going to be resonant and open. Right. If you look at the opportunity, how big is the market? What does that actually look like? Are they great at looking at that research? Or are they the founder that's like, we don't have competitors? It always makes me bristle. Because it's, for me, it's not a judgment. I would say, Alex, it's a signal that you're not open to actually looking or saying, I don't know. Right. That's okay too. That's all right too. I'd rather have a founder tell me, that's a great question, I don't know, I'm going to come back to you, then say, well, our research tells us that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Great. Right. Up and to the right. I love it. We're not playing hockey. This is not a hockey stick. And then I look at the go ahead.
So let's kind of pause the product for just a second and maybe drill into again, the mindset of a founder. So you were at Google, right? Like there's more resources there, you know, so you kind of you start living in the world where, you know, in a with unlimited resources, you know, what are the biggest kind of moonshots type of thing, right? I'm just putting some words into your mouth, but let's say you live in that world. Let's say a lot of investors do live in that world. Like, hey, the check size is not the key here. It's the big opportunity. And yet, like in a lot of these sort of maybe creative businesses where the business model is not quite, you know, clear yet, the premium is on scrappiness, right? And adaptability. And you know, I think I've taken, you know, an agency and a bootstrapping journey. I've bootstrapped, like predominantly bootstrapped, relate to AI. And I think there's a different mindset that you could still dream big dreams, but like you have to be maybe come from that immigrant background or have something where you're comfortable was being on a basic level to combine that. And that's a little bit more scarcity kind of different mindset than like abundance mindset. Tell me a little bit of how do you balance the sort of thinking big in 20 years, but being incredibly scrappy and
Oh, I
resourceful in
love
the short
that.
term?
Okay, so I have a really big grin on my face because I tend to not try to lead with the fact that I've been at Google. No, so first of all, I was at the Moonshot Factory, which Astro Teller, one of the most amazing humans on this planet, like he runs that very differently. And he doesn't, he runs, oh gosh, I don't know how to say this. It's like there's an abundant thinking to the scrappiness that needs to happen in execution. So, for example, for us, what is the lowest possible way that you can get this experiment done and still have the impact is actually the mindset that was put into us. We do not have unlimited budgets at the Moonshot Factory because, number one, we were not a revenue generating organization. And the premium was really on that thinking. But we knew that innovation doesn't just happen when you're comfortable. Innovation actually happens when you revel in your constraints, when you have two hands tied behind your back. If you think about the emerging technologies that are happening right now, for example, in continents like Africa, right? You have somebody here, I'm just going to draw a contrast. You have somebody here in the Silicon Valley who has access within a stone's throw to AI funding, financiers, investors on Sand Hill Road, some of the most amazing techies in the world building a fintech platform. Amazing. You got all that in your backyard. I love it. You got the access. Think about that person who's in Nairobi, who is an entrepreneur, who is trying to create a remittance platform, a financial trade platform where you can exchange cash and there's no internet. Where is the innovation, right? So if you think about that contrast, and I don't think a lot of us are aware of that when we're thinking about product and we're thinking about these different pieces. I really love, like, when you ask around, how do you marry those two? I love having conversations with founders and asking them, what's the scrappiest experiment that you've run? Astra was really amazing at this with us at the Moonshine Factory. It was not, by the way, experiment does not mean I'm going to prove to you all of the data so I can get the funding for the next quarter. It was, here are the signals, and you have to not be afraid to kill your project. Like, there was a real maniacal focus on kill criteria. Even if your metrics were up and to the right, metrics were different from signals. Because we had to create an opportunity that otherwise would not have been able to reach the stratosphere. So you have to really be thinking at that level. And by the way, as somebody who's left the factory and created these opportunities with Good Trouble and more so now, like really diving into the Troublemaker Lab. That has been priceless for me as a lesson in my life to learn that experimentation requires for you to be scrappy. And the price of admission to true innovation is being really, really good at how you create your design of experiment, right?
Interesting.
An experiment. And it's crazy, but the difference between metrics and signals, you're really driven into that because a signal is like, yes, we will blow out the water here for the next couple of years and we will make $10 million. Yay! But actually, here's the trough that we see based on how we're looking at the science and the market and the human dynamics and human factors. we're going to fall into a trough and either not make it. So should we kill it now and take all of the good pieces of that and build it into something better?
Yeah.
The game is about capacity when you're thinking about innovation and moonshots and thinking about where do you put that time to then grow something else that could be even more impactful.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it's interesting. The what you're describing is very nonlinear and not like the sort of derivative formula, like throw more salespeople or more SDRs and just kind of milk this thing and nail that market and then do it. And that's kind of the de facto standard thinking, at least in the software, B2B software world. But I think some of the breakout companies figure out some constraint, right? Particularly in the distribution, and then they figure out a more efficient way to distribute it, right? And I think that's
Absolutely.
very interesting. Yeah.
Well, mindset changed too. So I'm going to credit Matt Oppenheimer for this, who's the CEO of a company called Remitly. I had the opportunity of meeting him a few years ago. And what I loved, and this is around hiring, right? So some of your listeners that are thinking about talent and how do you bring that in this AI age, and specifically for founders that are hiring, it can be super tempting to go, oh, he or she has the skills and expertise for us to bring in at this stage of our company. But here's the reality. If you're a very early founding team and there's three of you, your next hire is 25% of your company. So how do you think about the culture of what you're bringing in versus
Yeah.
just the expertise and the skills? And you can compound that kind of very simple fundamental principle through how you're thinking about product. This next feature, X amount of dollars, is going to dictate 40% of our trajectory for the next blah blah in our P&L. How do
Yeah.
we think about that? And so it
Yeah.
takes that kind of courage to be curious around that versus just saying, "Oh yeah, it looks good. Let's move it." Not saying that's what people
Yeah.
say. But it's really that deep thinking to say, what's the scrappiest level of how we bring this down to its essence so we can build upon a really strong foundation?
I love it. What other kind of, but back to investment world, like other than the investment criteria, what are you seeing as these most enlightened founders that are able to kind of grow with the challenge, right? Like what is like you said there's some a few trends, right? Like are you applying your troublemaker lab lens and seeing kind of the leaders that are succeeding and and like are you identifying the sort of prototype of the founder, or is there such a thing, right?
Well,
Is there a perfect founder, right?
I don't know. I mean, here a couple of things I'm observing that I don't know too much about yet, but I'm getting really curious about that I can tell you. One of the things that I'm observing is at the founder level, there's a lot of systems thinking that's happening. So if you think about the emergence of what happened when ChatGPT came into play, a lot of people were founding companies on the basis of point solutions that needed to happen. This thing communicated to this, or this solved a calendar thing here, or this solved an email thing here, or this solved a whatever in the AI space. AI company valuation skyrocketed because there was so much ingestion. And so founders were really, going at it, going, oh, if I do this, I can get this. And it was a lot of incremental movement. And now with the technology and it being more ubiquitous and accessible, people are starting to really look at it systematically. And so then what we're seeing in the market is taking this point solution kind of like world and now looking at platform solutions, right? If you think about the companies like your Otters or your, I'm just going to take it to the meeting recorders, right? Everybody now has a meeting recorder. By the way, Google did not have that before. It's just now starting to have those things. If you think about Adobe DocuSign, I was on Google Workspace the other day, and it was like, oh, now you can do contracts through Google Workspace on your business solution. Those used to be point solutions that we were so enamored by when the first wave of technology came in. I think what I'm seeing in this trend of founders is really not only looking at the point solution and going, is that a problem worth solving that people have pain in? Number one, okay, check. Now, if that point solution is painful enough, is there a platform and an ecosystem that actually sustains that? And if so, what are the things in that stack, whether it's calendar, meeting, email, crawling, all of those things, right? And then now, if we look at the platform, what is the actual holistic purpose of the product you're creating? And
Right.
so I think that's the next level of unlock for founders. I would love for them to start looking at how do you look at your entire product landscape actually influencing the purpose of the pain that
Yeah.
originally gave you a signal that said, I'm going to solve calendar invites because it takes 19 hours for somebody to do the thing.
Yeah.
Now we're going to solve meeting notes. Now we're going to solve meeting recording. Now we're going to do,
Yeah.
insights from that.
Yeah.
What does that actually look like here? And so that's what I'm seeing is going from pain point to purpose and what pain point are we solving through the platform? And then founders really starting to think about more systematic problem building or problem solving and discovery.
Beautiful. And so as we wrap up, back to the creator, right, as your kind of the purpose, like how do you define creator? A lot of people in the audience, we that come from relate to AI side of the equation, they're creating knowledge work that, but they're thinking the definition of a creator is changing into somebody who is actually taking a proactive step at getting people to engage with their ideas. So it's not enough to create and put something out there in the world. The important thing is to put it out there, get the feedback, get it to the right audience, maximize the likelihood of success, but then bring it back and learn from that and recreate. We call it regenerative AI, where you're regenerating as you're learning. But that's sort of the sum of the audience here thinking, I'm creating a quote unquote, boring, regulated, some kind of material, but I still care about the people making the right decisions when they consume it and us having a conversation and building a trust for that. So we admire that movement, but that's probably not a classical definition of creators, but I'm curious what your take is on that.
I love that you walk through that journey because I think a creator is somebody who is a somebody who has the humility and the ambitious thinking. Somebody like we call it at the at Good Trouble humbitious kind of mindset. You're both humble and ambitious around what you're thinking about doing. I think a creator is somebody who is a rapid prototyper.
Right.
And I think they can prototype, but not have the ego to say, oh, no, like I didn't hit that right. It's like, oh, okay, now I have the courage to be curious and say, why didn't that hit right? Let's figure
Right.
out. And then that's where you actually develop your conviction about something, right? And so I think even reframing the fact that, for example, for your audience where it's, mundane or something that people, it's boring or it's compliance. You talked about a couple of things. How do you get them to decision faster? How do you get them to be a consumer of knowledge? And how do you get them to see things around the corner that they otherwise wouldn't have seen? If you reframe boring compliance process to those three things, you're already a creator because you're ahead of the game in thinking about what's actually going to help people move forward. You're creating that. Right. So that to me is a creator, and you can kind of take that equation across any industry.
Right.
Take anything and be able to create something out of it that is purposeful, that is impactful, that is something that will move something else.
That's beautiful. That's inspiring. And I think the reminder for people that sometimes things that are quote unquote regulated are really, really important. You wouldn't be if it nobody cared, if it didn't matter, it wouldn't be regulated. And
Like, wouldn't it
so
be awesome to be the creator that makes compliance fun again?
Yeah.
I mean, what an opportunity,
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's ever been that fun, but yes, we but it will be a first. And that and I love how your approach resonates kind of with this. And I think back it's almost back to one of, for example, one of the niche applications for some of our customers is around employee benefits, which is actually
Yeah.
health, wellness, self-awareness, right? And so that's some of the themes that you brought up. So please You know, learn more about what AJ is doing and her various adventures, whoever you are. But I love the vibe and the spirit, not only of you, but what you're building. AJ, how can people find you and how can they engage with your ideas better?
Please connect with me on LinkedIn, AJ Thomas with the lightning bolt. I think I'm the only one with the lightning bolt on there. I'm also on Instagram at Hello AJ Thomas, or you can get a hold of me, AJ at thetroublemakerlab.com. I'm pretty open and I love being able to have conversations with y'all.
Well, I love this conversation. I'm sure our audience will love it. Thank you for being so open and present and intentionally positive on this one. Thank you, AJ.
And thanks for being so incroyable.
Oh, bien sûr. Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relateto.com, RELYTO.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relateto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.